When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to the G-Note Podcast. I am your host, Jason Spicy G. Goldman, and I am a Grammy-winning record producer, arranger, and musician. I've been a music professor at USC for over 22 years, and I am most known for writing and producing music for the iconic Michael Bublé over the past two decades. This is a podcast for musicians who want advice and strategies on navigating the music industry. If you're not a musician but a fan, I promise there is plenty in here for you as well. On this podcast, we talk all things music. I'll be giving you tips and life lessons I've learned over my 30 years in the business, and I'll top it off with a dash of my humble opinion. On today's pod, we are talking about my first big break with legendary producer David Foster. Let's go. All right, folks, welcome back. On one of the earlier episodes this season, I spoke about my first encounter with the legendary record producer David Foster. If you haven't checked it out, I certainly recommend you do, as it will give you a little more insight into today's story. I was very fortunate to have many experiences working with David, and even to this day, I'm still super blessed to be able to continue to work with him in some capacity when he has projects that come up. And that mainly happened because of my work with Michael Bublé. I was on the road with Michael for a year, and we were getting ready to do the second album. And Michael would just always invite me to come hang out and watch how everything was being produced. And so, of course, once again, for those of you who've been following, you know I see an opportunity and I take it. So this was a great opportunity for me not only to be in the studio with Michael, but also to be in the studio with one of the greatest record producers of all time. And not only that, I mean, it cultivates my relationship with Michael as well, because we became friends over that year. So it was more than just, oh yeah, we're musicians trying to help each other out. But it was also a genuine and honest friendship, which I think is really important to this story. So if you don't know David, and I recommended earlier on the earlier episode, you should watch the documentary that's on Netflix. But David is very blunt, honest, and he doesn't give a shit who you are or care about hurting your feelings in the least. He will say what most people are thinking, whether he should or not. He knows what he wants, and the bottom line is he is going to get it, which is part of the reason why he ends up, you know, becoming such a great producer is because he wasn't willing to settle for less. Like many of the topics we've talked about here on the pod, he's always searching for the highest level, and that is in his art form and making someone else and or bringing someone else to the height of their art form as well. Okay, it was around October 2003, if I have this kind of right, and David was just starting to work on the second album. When he said to Bublé, we were sitting there, again, Bublé had invited me over. And by the way, we would go to David's house at the time, which was in Malibu, and he had this incredible studio on his property, which was an amazing piece of property. So we would go there, and many times we would hang out, and we wouldn't even do any music for like the first few hours. It would just be like hanging out, playing tennis, or doing something fun. But in any event, I was invited again by Michael to this session, and we were hanging out, and Foster says to Bublé, he said, look, Warner got you a gig doing the Christmas tree lighting at Rockefeller Center. And this is, of course, a huge honor. You know, keep in mind, Bublé is brand new. Most people didn't know who he was still at this time. So David said, let's do Let It Snow. And he went to the keyboard and started laying out an arrangement. This was something super typical that he would do. He does these kind of quick mock-ups of what he kind of wants. Within a couple of hours, he had a basic idea of what he wanted. He had his engineer record his keyboard playing and said, okay, I think I'm going to get, you know, give this to Don Sebesky to arrange this. Don is a noted arranger, has written for some huge people. But it's worth noting that David doesn't really orchestrate like an orchestrator would, right? We talked about this also in a past episode. Orchestrator will take someone's arrangement and then orchestrate it for whatever the instrumentation is. So David wanted a big band for this. So he would need to get someone who can write an orchestrate for big band. And also, it's a lot of arranging too, because David just kind of writes a sketch out. So let me clarify just quickly what the difference is between an arranger and an orchestrator. An arranger basically takes an existing song and creates a specific version of a song. They add their own counter melodies and ideas to an existing song. Often at my gigs at Vibrato, when I'm doing it with my big band, I do a demo of this arranging idea so people can kind of get an idea of what I'm talking about. And by the way, Vibrato has become our home for my big band, and you should definitely come check it out if you're in LA. The vibe is incredible, and you'll love it. An orchestrator takes an arrangement and writes parts for each instrument for a specific ensemble. So if you want to play the song Fly Me to the Moon, and you have a band made up of two saxophones, two trumpets, and a bone, piano-based drums, the orchestrator would take in the arrangement of that song and make sure each person had a part based on the arrangement. So hopefully that clarifies the difference. So in this particular project, again, David does a sketch, so he really kind of needs a combination of both an orchestrator and arranger for this. So once again, an opportunity I saw. I spoke up and said, I can do it. And so David looked at me and gave me a snarky laugh. It was like, no. And then he just basically proceeded to say, we'll get Don. If Don can't, and then he goes, if Don can't do it, maybe Bill Holman can. By the way, both icons in crooner music, American Songbook. And he's saying this in front of me with total disregard for the fact that I just arranged a bunch of music for Michael's opening show about a year ago, which he witnessed and really liked. But to him, it wasn't even like I didn't even equate into his thoughts. Thankfully, before we left for the day, the engineer gave me a copy of the demo. Of course, I had asked him for it, and he was kind enough to give it to me. Folks, I went home that night, and I wrote a big band chart on Let It Snow. I stayed up all night. Luckily for me, I'd already been working at USC for a few years, and we have a great big band. We have two really great big bands, but the top big band is fantastic. And so I went into their rehearsal the next day with my mini disc recorder at the time and asked if I could run my chart down. So I went in there, gave everyone their parts, and I recorded it. And the following day, we were going to be working at David's again. I say we were working. It's like, I was just invited to kind of watch and hang out. So I wasn't doing like a ton of work, you know, any heavy lifting. So we get up there and I get to David's, and I don't say a thing about the recording or the chart. They're just talking about the second album for 2 or 3 hours or something like that. And finally, David asks his assistant if they had heard back from Don Sebesky. And she says, no, not yet. And then I jump in and say, I did the arrangement. And he looked at me with this cocky look and said, what? And Buble kind of like looked at me like, whoa, what's going on? I said, I did the arrangement and I recorded it. And both he and Buble just stared at me literally for about 10 seconds. And in my head, I was like, oh shit, did I just cross a major line? Am I about to get reamed? Because that's really what I thought was about to happen, because they didn't say anything.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Again, David is staring at me with this look, kind of implying that he thinks this isn't going to be very good. So he says, play it. So the engineer plugs in my mini disc player and plays the recording. And David and Buble are just listening. Buble, luckily, you know, I can see he has a smile on his face. No expression on David's at all. The recording stops and David kind of pauses for a second. Again, there's kind of this awkward silence, at least for me, it was awkward, and says to his assistant, let's book Henson Recording Studio for next week. We're going to record this. So I remained calm on the outside, but inside I was like, holy shit, I did it. On the side, Buble was smiling and shaking his head as if he knew I would be able to do it. He always had confidence in me from the beginning that I could write charts. He always knew it because I would write stuff on the road. So, you know, and part of it is too, is, and this kind of goes to today's environment too. It's like, you want your friends and your crew to be successful with you. And he's always been a champion of mine. I mean, I know that not everyone can say that, but Buble is the real deal. And maybe it's because we have more than just like, you know, a professional relationship. We're like friends, but that didn't happen until we were on the road with our professional relationship and it grew into something that was a friendship. Here's a brief snippet of that version. And just so everyone's aware, in 2003, the original Let It Snow EP was actually just David's mockups. It was all crappy synth instruments and it didn't sound actually great. I mean, Michael's voice always sounds great, but it just didn't match Michael's style. So in 2007, they reissued Let It Snow with the only bonus track, an additional track being my version of Let It Snow, which was recorded live at Madison Square Garden. Again, this is just a snippet, so don't be mad at me if you're hearing a Christmas song in the middle of the summer. It's short, so check it out.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we no place to go.
So, guys, this is a big freaking deal. Just to give you an idea of how big a deal, there are 17 musicians in a big band typically. They all have to be paid. Then you have to rent a studio. All in all, not including what David probably makes, which was a fortune. This was easily a $10,000 session for one song, my song. So we finally, everything gets booked and time goes on a little bit. And the following week, I get there and we get to the studio. And I'm there with a studio big band conducting my first major session with David Foster producing in the booth. It was only one song, but it was literally a dream come true for me because I had never done anything at that level yet. And the fact that he was even willing to do that, you know, after hearing the chart and wanting someone else to do it, shows you how true of a musician David is. He was willing to go with what he thought was best. And, you know, of course, the other guys didn't do it yet, but he already liked it, which says a lot about him. So for all of his, arrogance in many circumstances, he still understands it's like, man, whatever's best for the recording is what we're going to do. So we're running through the chart and it was sounding great. I was feeling good. The band was really digging the chart and I was literally in heaven. There's really nothing like being in front of a band of 17 musicians, you know, having them play your music and you're up there just soaking it all in. So we're playing the chart and then we finish it and David pops in the cans, which are the headphones. And everyone can hear this, mind you. And he stops and he says, hey, let's take out the sax line in, I can't remember the bars, but it was like three bars or something. And I jump on the, you know, inside and I say, oh, I kind of like those sax. He cuts me immediately off and says, take it out, with one of the most stern tones you can imagine. And everyone could hear it. Cue the head slap, of course. He was not interested in hearing my opinion at all. It was at that session that I realized that I had to know my place. I may have kicked down the door to get there, but I have to earn my way to the top floor. You don't get to tell a 14-time, you know, Grammy-winning producer what you like and don't like unless he asks your opinion and unless I've earned it. And I wasn't the producer. The moral here, everyone, is the opportunity, again, we've spoken about this before, the opportunity was there, but it was up to me as to how badly I wanted it and what I was willing to do to get it. It wasn't handed to me in any way. I saw the opening and I went after it with everything I had. They don't always pay off, by the way, but this one sure did. And I can tell you, and this is total truth here, folks, the vast majority of great things that have happened in my life have been because I have taken the bull by the horns and done things quickly and professionally and to the highest level before others even had a chance to bypass me. I had confidence that I could do the job, and so I did it. I didn't worry about how much I was getting paid, as, you know, potentially I wouldn't have made any money if he didn't like it. It's just, I would have just spent, you know, a night of no sleep and running around and not getting gotten paid. But remember, no one knows how good you are until you show them. And sometimes in order to show them, you need to forcefully make them look at you and pay attention to you. Because the highest of the high won't just listen. You need to prove that you are the best. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for today's episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this pod so you can stay up to date with new shows, giveaways, and more importantly, the concerts. You got to come out to the concerts, folks. You know I want to see you there. You'll love the big band. I would love to see you there. You can also follow me on Instagram at SpicyGMusic or check out my website, jasongoldmanmusic.com, to see what projects I'm currently working on and to see when I'll be performing next. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Much love. Peace.